So thank you. We move to part two, section two, and I haven't given a title because we'll finish with this. All this, he says, I laid on my heart, examining it all, how the righteous and the wise and their deeds are in the hand of God, including both love and hate. People do not know everything that is before them. It's the same for everyone, since the same fate comes to all, to the righteous and the wicked, to the good and the evil, to the clean and unclean, to those who sacrifice and those who do not sacrifice. So for him, death's the end. As are the good, so are the sinners. Those who swear carelessly are like those who revere an oath. This is the evil in all that happens under the sun, that the same fate comes to everyone. So too, the heart of human beings is full of evil. Folly is in their heart while they live, and after that they join the dead. Indeed, who is the one who chooses? There's only one thing the living are certain of, and that's death. And for the dead, the finality of the grave. It's a really good example, I reckon, of teaching us how to read the Old Testament. You know, because here you've got, obviously, Jesus. It was said to you of old, but I say to you, you know, like, say, Christianity, really, we can't read the Bible as though it's on a flat plane, it's all true and it's all equally true. There's a gold thread coming through it, and we're watching for that all the time, and sometimes it's hard to see. And you've all seen a pretty important thread of gold in Ecclesiastes, but he's writing within assumptions that are actually not true. But that's what we're all doing. We've all got assumptions, you know, we're struggling with or taking for granted and so on. And so in the Vatican they have them too. They're all over the world, people. We're human beings, so we're within a context all the time. So here he's got... But then he admits, he said, well, for the dead... But he said, well, anyhow, he said, a living dog's better than a dead lion. Which is pretty smart. The living know they'll die. The dead know nothing. They have no reward. Even the memory of them is lost. Their love and their hate and their envy have already perished. Never again will they have any portion in all that happens under the sun. Go then, eat your bread with pleasure. And drink your wine with a merry heart. For God has already favoured what you do. God likes you having a good red. Let your garments always be white. Don't let oil be lacking on your head. Have pleasure with the woman you love. So he's got all these things. They're not the answer to all a man's dreams, and they're not necessarily wise, and you can get trapped by it. He said all that already. But finally, he's saying, have pleasure with the woman that you love all the days of your vain life.
And then I got reading the words.
That are given you under the sun, because that is your portion in life and in your toil at which you toil under the sun. All your hand finds to do, do with the strength you have. Do it. For there's no work or thought or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol to which you are headed. So you see the assumption underlying it all. Again, I observe that under the sun the race is not to the swift, the battle to the strong, bread to the wise, these are all maxims, you see, nor riches to the intelligent, nor favour to the skillful, but time and chance happen to them all. For random, in other words, it's all random. No one can anticipate the time of disaster, like fish in a cruel net, or like birds caught in a snare. So human beings are snared at the time of calamity when it suddenly falls upon them. This too, let's read to you now, I have observed about wisdom under the sun, and I regard it as significant. There was a little town, some experience in his life, with a few people in it. A great king came against it and besieged it, building great siege work against it. Now, there was found in it a wise commoner, and he, by his wisdom, might have delivered the town, but no one gave a thought to that commoner. And I thought, wisdom's better than might, yet the commoner's wisdom is despised, and his words are not heeded. The calm words of the wise are more to be heeded than the shouting of a ruler among fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one bungler destroys much good. I'm just thinking of Gallipoli then, but you'd have your own thoughts. You know, the First World War, what a stupid leadership happened there. Now we're regretting, and rightly, when one soldier gets killed in Afghanistan, we all know about it and we all ponder it. They had, what, thousands every hour getting mowed down, running up against machine guns, which you know. So he's kind of... A fly that dies makes the perfumer's oil give off a foul odour. So a little folly outweighs wisdom and honour. The heart of the wise inclines to the right, but the heart of a fool to the left. Don't tell Totally Abbott this bloody... Even when fools walk on the road, they lack sense and show to everyone that they're fools. If the anger of the ruler rises against you, don't leave your post, for calmness will allay great offences. There's an evil that I've observed under the sun, as great an error as stems from a property owner. A fool is set in high places, but the rich sit in a low place. I've seen slaves on horseback while princes are walking on foot like slaves. Chapter 10, verse 8. Whoever digs a pit may fall into it, and whoever breaks down a wall may be bitten by a snake. Whoever quarries stones may be hurt by them. Whoever splits logs may be endangered by them. If an implement is blunt and one doesn't sharpen the edge, more strength will be exerted. Wisdom, skill, proper thinking, helps one to succeed. If a snake bites before it's charmed, there's no point in getting a snake charmer. It's too late. And now I'll read to you. Words spoken by the wise bring favour, but the lips of fools consume them. The words of their mouths begin in foolishness, and their talk ends in wicked madness. Yet fools talk on and on. No one knows what is to happen, and who can tell anyone what the future holds? The toil of fools wears them out, for they don't even know the way to town. Just an embarrassing moment. On Saturday, I drove down to Thirroul, and I looked at the map, and I had it all in my head, and it was all clear. And I went down Illawarra Highway, and Macquarie Pass, is it?
Yeah.
And I got onto... Now, there's a freeway, there's a Northern Distributor, and there's Prince's Highway, and they all seem to be the same, and they keep swapping names, and the Northern Distributor is called by another name, and I'm going along, and I'm going along, and I didn't leave heading north, and I found a sign telling me that Nowra was ahead of me.
Oh, dear.
Nowra was ahead of me, and I thought, oh, no, I can't. So I turned around and went back. Because I hadn't turned around, I didn't think. I turned around and went back and finally went into a pub. Thank God for pubs. At somewhere short of Thirroul. It'll come to me in a minute. So I knew the Coromel. And I went into this down the pub and I saw a chap with an Irish face. And his wife was sitting next to him. And I said, I need a guardian angel. Is Thirroul anywhere near here? Oh, yeah, this is not too far. I said, well, just tell me how to get there, will you? So they said, they got his phone out with all the maps on it. You got one of those?
Yeah.
Holy smoke. And he said, go down there and turn left into the Northern Distributor. I said, was I on the Northern Distributor? Yes. But they call it, something's got another name in here. So I got on that, and then I was right, I finally got there. So I just thought of that then. The fools don't even know the way to town. So why would you go and listen to them give a lecture? It beats me. Alas for you, O land, when your king is an immature youth and your princes carouse in the morning. No one's blushing. Happy are you, O land, when your king is noble and your princes feast at the proper time, in a way that befits a man, and don't get drunk. Through sloth the roof collapses, and through indolence the house leaks. Just watching to see how you're going. Feasts are made for laughter. Wine gladdens life, and money makes all things possible. Don't speak ill of the king, even among your intimates, or of the rich, even in your bedroom. For a bird of the sky may carry your voice, or some winged creature report the matter. And as I... spies were all over the place in their world, and watch what you say, he says. And then a phrase you've all learnt since you were children: release your bread upon the waters. In the course of time, you may get it back. Give a portion seven ways. He's talking about generosity then. Enjoy your life and let others enjoy it with you. And that's what it's about, so get on with it. Give a portion seven ways or even eight. You don't know what disaster may happen upon the land. If clouds become full, they empty rain on the earth. Whether a tree falls to the south or to the north, in the place where the tree falls, there it will lie. Whoever watches the wind will never sow, and whoever watches the clouds will never reap. Pretty good advice, all this, I imagine. Just as you don't know how the breath comes to the fetus in the mother's womb, you don't know the actions of God, the one who makes all things happen. So we're back to that assumption of God as the organizer and controller running the world from heaven. In the morning, sow your seed. At the evening, don't let your hands be idle. for you do not know which will prosper, this or that, or whether both alike will be good. Light is pleasant, and it's delightful for the eyes to see the sun. If one should live many years, one should rejoice in them all and remember that the days of darkness are many. We'll be dead for a long time. All that comes is vanity. I think this has got a great lot of wisdom in it, and I think rejoice, young man, he's talking to his students, while you're young, and let your heart cheer you all the days of your youth. Look at this for good advice. Follow the inclinations of your heart and the desires of your eyes. It's kind of advice that I wasn't given too much of when I was young. But there it is. But it's really good because he adds, and do that. Follow the inclinations of your heart and the desires of your eyes, and know that for these things God will bring you to judgment. What you do matters. So it matters what you do. So you have to be thoughtful, and all the rest comes in then, doesn't it? Comes in as to guide us to be prudent and to act beautifully. But we, unless a child, a young person, is helped to get in touch with their own heart, they're not actually in touch with anything. So they might be doing what they're told to get it while they're under the constraints of the home or whatever is happening. They're doing what they're told, but they're not actually connecting with the inclination of the heart or the desires of the eyes. Isn't it much better to be advised to get in touch with your heart, follow it? And then there's a pause. But wait a minute. What you do with your desires, desires are never wrong. What you do with them might hurt you, might hurt others. You'll be judged by it. But get in touch with it. Banish anxiety from your heart and put away pain from your body, for youth and the dawn of life are fleeting. And then remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come and the years draw near, when you'll say, I have no pleasure in them. One leg out of bed and the other one won't come. And you kind of, you know, it's just so, live your life and enjoy with what you've got. Do it. Now I'm going to read to you from my commentary, because I'm drawing on, it's not quoting, but I did read a wonderful article. It's by a Frenchman, Jacques Ellul, and the book is called Reasons for Being, a Meditation on Ecclesiastes, written in 1990. And I found it quite inspiring, so I'm not quoting, I'm just drawing on it. So I'll just read you what I want to say about that. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come and the years draw near, when you'll say, I have no pleasure in them. All God asks is that we don't treat God like an archive piece, like an amazing, all-powerful being who did wonderful things a long time ago, back then in the early days of our people. We might think of Jesus working miracles of healing back 2,000 years ago in the Transfiguration, and we're reading these texts as though they're just pictures taken from Jesus' life rather than extraordinary. Anyhow, Kohelet reminds us to remember our Creator now while life is opening up before us. For the first time in our 12 chapters, Kohelet calls God by a name other than simply God, namely Creator. Remember your Creator. While we are young, she challenges us to remember that we're not the Creator. All we are and all we have is gift. We're totally dependent on God. We're not the master of creation, free to do what we like. Like everything around us, we're a creature, and it's our relationship with our Creator that defines us and gives us our identity. I think that's why he said, get in touch with your heart. Because if you get in touch with the heart, you're actually in touch with God. Because God is your heart. God is the heart and beyond of everything. So he's asking each, and each person has to do it for themselves, because every heart is uniquely different from every other one. So encouraging people to get in touch with their real desires and their real heart and their real inclination is asking them to get in touch with the movement of God, drawing them, inspiring them, etc. The whole of Ecclesiastes has insisted that all this about creation is beyond our comprehension. It's foolish not to acknowledge this. It's foolish to forget it or to fail to consider it as we emerge into adult life. We're free, but we're not independent or autonomous. We mustn't deceive ourselves by thinking that we create anything. God and God alone is the creator. If anything we do has value and is not just a waste of time and energy, hebel, it is because we're acting as God's instruments. All the evils in our world stem from our forgetting this. It's important for this awareness to come during the time of our youth. And you grandparents, parents, this is your job, is to don't let them get scattered, because the television isn't telling them a lot about life, and the media probably isn't either, and adults lie to them, you know, all that. So somebody, and who better than a grandparent really, has got to somehow help the child get it in. It's important to get this awareness that we're dependent on God, and that God is at our heart, and that the divine, the sacred, is who we really are from our youth. It will give direction to our blossoming energy and joy, for it will keep us connected to our Creator. It's never too late to remember God, but if we do not remember him in our youth and only turn to him in our declining years, there's a danger that this God to whom we turn will be little more than a crutch, an idol, our last resort, rather than our hope. It's important that we remember our Creator when our life is still opening up before us, so that we will, in the words of Jesus, what a beautiful thing he said, live and live to the full. When I was teaching it, I just thought of it then, when I was teaching at Chevalier 40 years ago, all boys, rugby was everything, and all boys' schools a disaster, I think. But anyhow, that's how it was. I didn't know any better. And while I was teaching them behaviour, moral theology, every day I'd always do it, and without fail, I'd write on the top of the board, I have come that you may live and live to the full. Quote, John chapter 10, verse 10. And then I'd say to the kids, you know, the footballers who were in the class, because that's all we had, if I say anything to you about anything, sex included, if I say anything to you that doesn't sound like it's about life and life to the full, have a go at me, because I'm not telling you the truth. That kind of interested them. But it is true, isn't it, that all our moral theology, all the teaching of the church, John Paul II said, and I just wonder about it, but then he said, the church proposes, it imposes nothing. So he said it, he meant it, and then, but it's, then you look and you kind of wonder if it's actually so in the name of, but it's true. The church is a free thing. No one has to belong to it. It's a gift, and it's proposing, what's the church proposing? Life and life to the full. So every commandment that's got any value at all, for priests, for religious, for women, for men, for the church, for everybody, it's all about helping me live to the full, not because behaviour that's dysfunctional cuts back on my freedom, doesn't it? But that's how it's got to be presented. Well, that's how I used to present it in here. And anyhow, I did my best to do it. And well, now that another memory's flooding, you have to put up with this. There was a big bloke, I know his name, I can still remember it, and he was in the front row, twice as big as me, of course. And I was reading him something out of Tire de Chardin, which I was getting all, you know, romantic about this den. And he said, bullshit. Wait for it. I don't get angry. Like, anger is not a thing I have to trouble with much, but I went white with kind of whatever, and I grabbed the book I had in my hand, and I went to the front desk and slammed it on the desk in front of him. And I said, have you ever read Tire de Chardin? No. I said, do you know where the library is? Yes. Why don't you go in there and get your head together? And, you know, and I just went for him. The class was as silent as... Then I went back and then I apologised for losing my temper. But it was gone quickly, like I didn't hold on to it. But probably that kid still remembers that. And maybe he did go to the library. Like, anger's all right, isn't it, when it's... Don't you think? I don't think we're angry enough about our world and what goes on. But anyhow, I don't want to excuse myself, but I did. I went white because he hadn't read anything and he was calling something bullshit that he didn't know what it was about. And maybe I was getting a bit off, you know, off the planet. Well, I was reading something else to you, wasn't I? Yeah, the danger is we'll live... So I live and live it to the full is what the whole church is about. Nothing else. It's important that we remember our Creator when our life is still opening up before us, is what he's saying. So that we will, in the words of Jesus, live and live to the full. God's gift is that our lives be productive. Something that can happen only when we live within the stream of God's creative action. What a tragedy if we remember God only out of regret for a wasted life. As we heard in the earlier poem, there is for everything a moment, a time for every matter under heaven. Youth is the time to remember our Creator. This is true also for the beginnings, the youth, of all our projects, lest by not remembering we waste our life and waste our energy. Well, I was inspired in here by Elul to write that, and I hope it's inspiring enough, but it's the best I could do there. And I'm sure it's kind of true. And I'll continue reading from chapter 12, verse 2 to 8. This is the last passage before the epilogue. Before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars are darkened. This is such good poetry. This is great. In English, even. I'll start again. Before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars are darkened and the clouds return after the rain, on the day when those who watch the house tremble and strong men cower and those who grind cease working because they're too few and those who look through the windows see dimly. When the doors onto the street are shut and the sound of the mill grows silent. When one rises, startled, to the sound of the sparrow and the songbirds swoop low. Even from on high, they see terror on the way. When the almond tree makes one turn away and the locust droops and the caper fails. For all must go. He's describing a funeral procession. Your funeral procession and mine and this morning John Hare's. So all must go to their eternal home and the mourners process in the streets. before the silver tendril is smashed. These must refer to little practices they had on the funeral, say. Before the silver tendril, it looks like they're talking about a candelabra, a thing that holds candles, but it's made out, it looks like a tree and the candles are in it. Before the silver tendril is smashed, or the golden bowl is shattered, and the pitcher is broken at the fountain, or the pulley at the cistern rusts. Before dust returns to the earth as it was, and the breath returns to God who gave it. Vanity of vanities, says Kohelet, all is vanity. And that's the conclusion of the book. But the editor, the author, writes an epilogue and then tells us about the book. By way of a postscript, says the later editor, being an exponent of wisdom, Kohelet taught the people knowledge. He, and it is a he, listened and pondered. He also edited many proverbs. Kohelet sought to find attractive words and wrote words of truth correctly. The sayings of the wise are like goads. Like nails firmly fixed are the collected sayings that are applied by a herder. Of anything beyond these, my son, beware. There is no end to the excessive amount of writing that's around, and much talking wearies the body. The end of the matter, all has been heard. So this is the kind of, so fear God, I hope you get that, respect the sacred, fear God, keep his commandments. Nothing in the whole of the book of Ecclesiastes ever talks about God's commandments, so it's clearly another person writing in another later situation from another point of view, but that's okay. Fear God, keep the commandments, that's the whole duty of everybody. For God will bring every deed to judgment. God will bring every deed into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or bad.